Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is Venile Magwakwa. She is the author of three books, Heart, Mind, and Money, Using Emotional Intelligence for the Financial Success, and the Holistic Wealth Manifesto Workbook. Oh, sorry, I messed up those titles a little bit. Let me start that over. So the first book is Heart, Mind, and Money, Using Emotional Intelligence for Financial Success, the Holistic Wealth Manifesto Workbook, the Next Level You Money and Womb Journal. So I'm sorry for that. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me on the show. Hello, everyone listening.
And I'm going to say a little bit more about her because she's really impressive. She has a finance honors degree from the University of Cape Town, South Africa, and an MBA from the Simmons School of Management. She's currently residing in Costa Rica, she shared with me. She started her personal finance journey by paying off $60,000 in debt and living a cash life. Venile is the founder of WealthyMoney.com, a company that helps women of color heal ancestral money trauma so they can fall in love with their bank accounts, increase income, and live their best lives. So I'm really excited because she's our first guest that we've had talking about money. And it's super important for survivors to talk about money. So thank you so much for being here. Is there anything else you want to share about your bio before we?
No, I feel like you've already covered it. It's really, really good. Yeah.
Well, you've got some podcasts you could talk about.
Yes, I've got the Money Magic podcast that I do. So that's available on Apple, Spotify, and Podbean, and also on YouTube. You can also check out the Property Magicians podcast, where me and my co-host, Dr. Miranda Mulotto, we talk about property investing and how to get started in property investing as an average, ordinary person without a lot of cash or cash flow.
Beautiful. So obviously, right? My first question is, how did you get interested in having a company that helps women of color with ancestral money trauma?
I think because of my own trauma. I think that we come to this work because we have our own traumas and we are dealing with our own stuff, right? I think years ago, I was like everybody else. I always thought that trauma was the big stuff that happens to you. And I've certainly had big stuff happen to me. And I think I really, really struggled to figure out why was it so hard for me to move forward? Like I've always said to people, like, I feel like other people have been able to do life easily, at least from the outside looking at, right? But for me, small things, even like looking at your bank account or looking at my bank account or pricing my products and services or invoicing or talking about money in a relationship, even just saying anything about money, always felt like life or death for me. You know, like I could... it was a risk and I could actually die, you know? It always felt like that. And I didn't understand just what was going on at a nervous system level. I think people kept telling me, visualize it, affirm it away, keep telling yourself you're super confident. I used to think that I had like this deep fear of failure and that I lacked confidence and self-esteem. Come to find out it's trauma and it's affecting so many different areas of my life. Mm-hmm. And we also don't see how like money trauma is small things that happen in our lives. You know, even the way that we were criticized as kids, the way that we were told that we're not good enough, these little things stay in our brains. So even when we launch businesses, those voices are in our heads and they're telling us that we're not good enough. And those parts of us, the sub-personalities that are really frozen in those moments and in those memories, are invested in playing out that trauma or else protecting us from the same pain. So we start repeating certain cycles and we think we're terrible entrepreneurs, we're terrible at marketing, we're terrible at saving money or managing money, whereas it's just these are the things that we've been told or we've had certain experiences that have reinforced what we've been told, and we form stories based on those experiences. And that's all trauma that affects us. And I noticed that people weren't talking about that. And in particular as to why women of color, is because we live in a world where I think that women in general have been continuously oppressed throughout time, obviously. The way that women approach money is so different to how men approach money. If you grow up as a man, you're told you can do anything and you believe it because so much of the world is not against you in that sense, that like your gender is something that works against you. And then when you add the intersectionality of race and gender, it becomes even more pronounced, right? Is that like suddenly you have so many ancestral traumas that are related to being a woman of color in this body, and that only certain traumas would really have been experienced to their fullest or in certain manners because you are a woman of color or because you are a descendant of women of color. So then we need to unpack those traumas. And I think we don't ever talk enough about how oppression, like the trauma of being oppressed, either as a woman or a person of color, or in particular as a Black woman or person that is not, doesn't fall into the heteronormative space, how that all affects us and the way that we see ourselves and the way that we perceive ourselves as people. That is deeply traumatic, because I think trauma is also something that changes, can also be defined as a thing that changes as an event or situation that changes the way that we perceive ourselves and our own power as well, and our own ability to tap into our power and own our power. And I think for years and centuries, Black women have literally had to face systems that stop them from tapping into their own power.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you are a pretty powerful speaker. I don't know if anyone has said that to you. I could listen to you talk all day. That was really great.
Thank you.
If I may ask, and you can certainly decline to answer or share whatever is comfortable. My audience connects with speakers who are able to share pieces of their trauma story. Mm-hmm. What about your story are you comfortable with sharing today? And again, there's no pressure to share something you haven't disclosed.
I share so much of it, it's fine. Like, I feel it's hard to help people. I think as a coach of any kind, right? Like, it's hard to help people without really making yourself vulnerable and helping them see who you are as well.
I so agree with
that. Yeah, so it becomes inevitable. So my story starts from childhood. So growing up in South Africa, watching my mother make money and lose money, and then having my mother make my uncle our guardian. And when she did that, so this is kind of an interesting story, because my uncle was educated during the apartheid era in East Germany and Russia. And so even though he was African, his entire educational mindset, because he left South Africa at the age of 16, was really formed in these countries. I don't want to say the West, because that's also East Germany and Russia at the time were very much communist. So even his views weren't very Western, but they were very communist in that regard. So he came back with very interesting and unique views as to how to bring up children that was completely different to the African landscape, right? And also just his way of thinking. But there was also another thing. There was the assumption that everybody in the family made was that My uncle has been educated abroad and is not educated in Africa. So as a result, he must know more about money than anyone else in the family. At the time, my mom was an entrepreneur. She was making way more money in her business, running everything, providing for the extended family. But still, because of my uncle's education and his upbringing and how he'd been educated, the assumption was that he's got degrees. He's lived in all these other countries, so he must know more about money. And I think we all tend to carry that assumption in this world. It's that if someone has a PhD or has a master's, we assume that they know more about money and how to manage money and make money than someone who doesn't have a degree. So I saw this play out in my family. Now, then my mother decided to sign over guardianship of my sister and I to my uncle because of that, which is just a whole other story because my dad was right there. And then she gave over all her assets and her finances, her money, everything to my uncle.
Wow.
Yeah, based on this. And also there's just a tiny fraction of it is that he's a man, he will know how to make this multiply, how to multiply the assets and multiply money, right? So there's also just a little bit of the gender thing, but that was not really the driving force. The driving force was my uncle's education. We moved in with my uncle in my teens. So right up until then, I had had no concept of financial struggle because my mother had been doing extremely well. So everything I'd wanted, I'd gotten. I'd never had to really lack for much. We moved in with my uncle and he was earning at around about the 1% of South Africa in the 1% because again of his education, his history, he spoke multiple language, international languages, just everything. And yet every payday, my uncle would get paid so much money and he had my mother's assets and finances, right? By maybe the 6th or the 7th of the month after he got paid, there would be no money in the house. And my uncle would be borrowing money from my grandmother, who was a pensioner. So I grew up seeing that. And at the same time as all this is happening, my mother had made the assumption that her assets would be growing under my uncle. She lost everything. Within a year or two, everything that she had built went down. And then I watched my mother go from having money to cars being repossessed. But not only that, I started to realize for the first time in my life, in my teens, how when you have money, people give you a certain standing in society. So my mother also lost a lot of her social connections, a lot of her standing. Family members abandoned her. So by default, we got abandoned from that because you're no longer in a particular social class. So experiencing that. And then also with my uncle, just living this, making a lot of money, having money, and then like really having money for like 7 days and having insane parties and politicians and celebrities coming to the house. By the 7th day, like having nothing for like 21 days until the next paycheck and having that experience. And then just also noticing how that was messing with my nervous system, but I didn't know that. So then I decided I was going to go study finance because as a teen, I'm watching this and I'm thinking everything is because my family doesn't have financial education and investment education and all that. So I went and I studied finance, which is how I ended up studying finance. And yet when I graduated with my finance degree, I found myself replaying everything that my uncle had done. You know, like I was worse. Like I would get paid and my money would be gone in 2 or 3 days. And so I was holding down a job as a mining and energy analyst, but then I taking on 2 more jobs as a waitress. So I never got any rest and I just kept working. Then I decided I'm going to go do my MBA. Went, did my MBA in Boston, Massachusetts. And once I graduated, something really bizarre happened. I started having panic attacks with money. So every time I would go manage money, handle money, deal with money in any way, I would end up on the pavement freaking out, having a full-on panic attack. And that's when I started getting really, really depressed because everything I did just didn't work out with money. After about a few years, about 2 years of dealing with the panic attacks, I ended up just having a hard time getting out of bed. I was so depressed, I could barely get out of bed. So that's when I started looking at this work. And because a friend of mine once said to me, then a friend of mine was like, Van, you're doing all the affirmations, all the visualization, but you come from a family of shamans. What if the entire experience with money has nothing to do with you thinking bad thoughts around money or thinking about debt and not being positive enough? What if it's something deeper and it has to do with ancestral stuff, that ancestral trauma is passed down from generation to generation? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started looking into this work and I started researching. I went to Vipassana, a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat. Mm-hmm. And that started everything because I was in Vipassana and they tell you to focus on the body and the sensations in the body. And I started to notice that the sensations in my body were linked to thoughts in my head and money, that I was even panicking about money, even though for 10 days I was sitting in silence and I had no money in front of me. So I realized that this can't be about money, because what I'd been aware of before was that I'm having panic attacks when I'm managing money and when I'm dealing with money. But at Vipassana, I wasn't dealing with money, you know, because I'm just sitting in meditation. So I was like, no, this is deeper, because why is it that I am not dealing with money? I'm not seeing money. I'm not handling money in any way for 10 days, but I'm having a panic attack and I'm starting to freak out and things are just going haywire for me. And this is how the work started. I really, really started to go deeper into my work around looking at trauma, understanding ancestral trauma, understanding the nervous system, the sensations in my body, and how it all links to money.
Okay. And well, tell us more. So you started digging, but what was healing for you? Like, how did you get past the trauma?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to have a sip of water. Wow. So the first thing I did when I got out of the Vipassana, because now I've had like this revelation, right? Mm-hmm. And then I contacted a friend of mine who's a therapist, and she's like, this was in 2011. So trauma wasn't even a thing that people spoke about then, right? It wasn't like, especially not as widely as people are speaking about it now to try and understand it and what's going on. So, and I was like, something is happening. And I explained to her and she was like, there's this life coach in South Africa. You should really contact her. I think that she'll understand what you're going through. And because she was like, well, this is ancestral stuff. I know about ancestral stuff, but I'm still working through my own stuff around the church where I've been told that ancestors are not good, all that stuff. So maybe talk to this life coach. So I go ahead and I speak to her, and she then introduced me to the work of Byron Katie.
I love Byron Katie, but I wanted to say, when you said that trauma wasn't well known in 2011, it was, but I think what you meant maybe is we didn't know or study much about ancestral trauma.
Yeah.
I think that's, I was trying to think what I did and didn't know. Cause I've been doing the work for 24 years.
Yeah.
So I think back then I didn't know much about ancestral. That part was to me at some point, the ancestral piece. But Brian Payne is awesome. I'm going to write down that you like her for the show notes.
Byron Katie, like, she changed my world, you know. Like, being introduced to Byron Katie was one of the work of Byron Katie was one of the most profound things. So this life coach uses, and she still coaches me now on and off, she uses the work of Byron Katie and a bunch of other modalities, but that's where she started with me. And she was like, you may want to check out Byron Katie and maybe do some of the exercises. Mm-hmm. So I kid you not, for like the first 3 to 6 months of my life, she told me, she was like, I know you're struggling with finances, with everything, but what if you just commit for 6 months, 8 hours a day, you just work on questioning your thoughts. You just work on meditating, resting, going to yoga, and coming back and doing the work of Byron Katie, writing down all the thoughts that you believe, and then you just question them like you would a job. And I mean, I think the other thing is because, like I said, I was so depressed, right? I got out of Vipassana and I've never experienced depression since, which is so bizarre. Like, oh, I've never had a thought of like, I want to end my life or I'll never get out of this. That's why I feel like Vipassana was so transformative for me. For like just 10 days, it completely transformed my life. But, and again, this was my experience, right? But then I was like, so scared, because one of the things I didn't mention here was that I've been struggling with depression since I was 15. I'd been struggling with like suicidal ideation with so much since the age of 15 that like, for me, when I got out of this, like when I was 28, I got out of the past night, it was like a week before my 28th birthday. And to just have like a few days without those thoughts, I still thought it was a fluke. You know, because I'd had like over 10 years. So when my coach said, this is what you do, it will help you, I jumped on it because I was like, oh my gosh, I heard Byron Katie's story about her depression as well. And I was like, oh my gosh, I totally resonate with this. I'm going to do this work. And that was literally the beginning of the most transformative thing for me. I had always assumed that to change my finances, to change my life, I have to do. And for the first time, I was asked to just be and to go within and to just figure out what was happening in my thinking process and not to stop myself from thinking my thoughts, which I think is what made the, which is why I love the work of Byron Katie so much, is that you're not being asked to think positively. Whereas I came from this background of you watch The Secret, you affirm away what you're feeling, you know, and like it had actually worsened my experience for whatever reason. Well, I know now what happened, but I just sat there and I started questioning my thoughts. I started doing work. I started doing breath work. I discovered EFT tapping. My life transformed before my eyes. I was $60,000 in debt, by the way, when all this started. So in 2011, when I started all this, I was $60,000 in debt. At the end of 2011, I made the decision to move back to South Africa. And my debt was denominated in US dollars and pounds. And I was going to earn, at the time, $1 gave you like 10 rand. So already $60,000 in debt. What I was going to be earning in South Africa was going to be way less than what I was ever going to make in the US, right? At least 10 times less. But my gut instinct was like, go back home and just do the work and get a part-time job and try to start a business and see what will happen there. And that's what I did. By 2014, I had paid off $60,000 in debt using South African rands. And not only that, I had saved up like close to 50,000 US dollars as well. It was... Wow. None of it made any sense in my head. But so that's the work that I did. And I did a lot of EFT tapping. And then my coach also noticed, she was like, I noticed that when you're doing the work and you're doing all these other people's work, you're doing your own, you create your own exercises. Because I was just noticing that there were things that were missing in the gap for me that I felt like I needed to create and record my own breathwork exercises. I needed to record my own meditation sessions. I needed to do my own EFT tapping scripts. So she encouraged that. So I started doing my own work and I started sharing the work with people. At first, not bothering about charging for it or anything. And then people started talking about it and were like, oh my God, this is transformative. It's really changing our lives. So this is how my healing journey started to really evolve.
Oh, that's so such a beautiful story. I have EFT books on, or the tapping on money to help with money abundance. I can't remember the exact title right now, but yeah, that is such a powerful story. Now,
Thank you.
Do you know if depression was a genetic in your family as well, or was it just you and your circumstances, or both?
I believe it's both, and I'll tell you why. Because when things started to change for my uncle and everything, because as you've heard, like his financial story, eventually his finances got to a point where like he just could not pay for anything. My uncle ended up owing so many people. And in the last few years of his life, like I just observed my uncle, I think the last 15 years of his life, he just went from being this really lively human to being this person that was just could only just sit in front of the TV and just watch TV and not do anything. This is a man that, like, a lot, I always say to people, like, all things aside with the drama with my uncle, a lot of how I think and reason comes from my uncle. He taught me so much about life and things. He was one of the smartest humans I knew. But by the time he passed on, like he had been severely depressed. Like I saw him just not be able to do anything. And also this is on my mother's side, right? And then I know some cousins on my mother's side that have also struggled with depression since their teens. So it seems like something happens to us in our teens and it just, you know, kind of like flips, which is quite common if you look at ancestral trauma. A lot of traumas will be triggered even by a particular event or by an age, by coming of age at a particular time. And then on my dad's side, there's a lot of suicide as well. So I think I got it from both sides, and that being genetic, I almost feel like it was inevitable, you know? I also think the other thing with depression is I realized that it's also that we don't have the tools. As I realized that as a teen, as on top of everything, there's also the epigenetics element, right? Which is that so much is coming at you as a teenager or even as a child in your home environment, and your nervous system is so overwhelmed, you don't have the resources to process all the events that are happening, which is what was happening with me. So as I've mentioned about the money part, another thing that was happening in my mom's family, because I was living with my uncle and then my mom moved in, and then my uncle decided that all the other family had to move in. So imagine like an entire extended family. He had 21 hectares of land. So different people could, so there was more than enough space for people to have their own little houses and to have their own housing situation. But that meant that like everyone around you is family. So if anyone knows what that's like, I don't even have to explain to you, right? So everyone around you is family. All the drama is family drama. Everything is just so intense. And so there would be lots of fights in the family, and some of them would even get physical, you know, so there was a lot of verbal, emotional and physical abuse. And on top of that, I was not a child that took things lying down. I was always like a fighter and completely unruly, right? So like I would go to everybody, but that meant that like I got attacked a lot as well, and I didn't have the resources. So of course, by the time I was like 15, I was already, the good thing is that I took myself to therapy and I was just like, send my dad the therapist bill. And my dad never, ever questioned it, you know? So I took myself to therapy. He just knew, right? But I just hadn't, one of my teachers was like, you need to see a therapist. And then they referred me to a therapist. So went there. I qualified and I took myself to therapy, and I was just like, call my parents. I was just like, call my dad. I'm pretty sure he's going to okay all this. And he okayed it, but I was still deeply, deeply struggling. And why my teachers also had to get involved was that they could see, like the adults around me outside of the family could see that something was wrong and I wasn't going to make it through. So another thing that I always say is that I'm grateful that I had therapy in my teens, because I genuinely don't know what would have happened to me, because I just needed to have 2 hours every week where I could go and unpack and know that I am heard and to hear my own thinking process.
I'm really glad you had that resource. That's not typical, right? Especially 2 hours a week. That's rare.
Yeah. I had it twice a week, but like my situation was really intense. I think because I was already suicidal and I was in my teens, and I think that teens are the, when you're already feeling that way, it becomes one of the danger zones. Yeah. So I was on a, so basically it was also just like watching me to make sure that like, I'm not going to do anything.
Okay. Yeah. More serious.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us more about your work with women. Like, do you have courses? Do you do coaching? What does it look like? I know you have books.
Yes. Yeah. So I have books, I have courses, and I also have a mastermind, right? And then I also run international retreats. So one of the things that I do is I talk a lot about my signature course, which is the Money Magic course, where people get in, where women get in, and we work on every aspect of their finances. We work from the savings, debt, income, and eventually investment, which is why I also started the Property Magicians podcast with my co-host, and why we also then started Property Investing Fund. So we also run a property investing fund, because one of the things that would happen is that women would become debt free, they would increase their income, they'd have savings. And then the next question was, what do we do with our money? Now that you've helped us get here, what do we do? And I'd always just assumed people would figure it out. Like you'd stop being my, like it would stop being something that I spoke about. And then I realized that no, like it's a valid question. But in my courses, what we look at is I always say only a third of the course is practical stuff around budgeting, saving, paying off debt. So we have look at debt repayment strategies, saving, budgeting. We look at strategies around growing your business and increasing your income. And the course is lifetime access. And you do this course in any manner. You don't start it from lesson zero, which is the first lesson, all the way to lesson 23. All the lessons are done in different ways. And each lesson, a lesson can take up to 6 months to finish. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it's not designed to ever be completed. It's designed to help different people. So if you have a particular trauma that you want to work on and that's affecting your finances, you can just be in one lesson for 6 months or even a year without even looking at the other 22 lessons or bonus lessons. It's not about getting the course done. It's about healing. And I think that healing doesn't have a timeline at all. Yeah. So the course really, and then the other two thirds of the course is really looking at your trauma, at trauma linked to money. So different aspects of trauma. So we look at ancestral trauma. We look at how do you connect with the ancestors. We look at vows that you may have made in different lifetimes. We even look at, we even go into past lives and look at like how do, what are some of memories that you could be carrying from different lifetimes that then impact you in this lifetime. We do a lot, a bulk of the work though is on inner child healing, inner teen healing. We look a lot at archetypes. So we look at archetypes that we've created around money and how those archetypes have been influenced by our family relationships with money. And we also look at the dynamics around money. So a huge part of the work is really looking at family dynamics, mainly because of my background, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's given me an in-depth understanding of family dynamics and how those family dynamics start to impact us. We look at the mother wound, we look at the father wound, we look at how allowing ourselves to succeed and expand could change the dynamics within the families. And then because of the work that I do with women of color, we also look at Black tax, the pressures, which Black tax for people listening in that don't know, it's like when you make money within most collective communities, you are expected to then support the family and the extended family. So not always, but in some families, there are expectations that you go abroad, you study, you suddenly make more money, then suddenly you have more expectations that you will educate your sister's kids, your cousin's kids, you'll pay for so many things. So we look at how do we maneuver that? How do we set boundaries around that? How does that completely refusing to play that role, how does that start to destabilize the family? And how do you ensure that like the family doesn't fall apart? Because if you are the highest earner, there are still all these expectations of you. So how do you maneuver all this and still remain part of the collective? Because I think being in collective communities is completely different to being in individual communities, right? Like, so collective communities, there's so many expectations and a lot of your identity also comes from the collective. So how do you carve out an individual identity when you're coming from a collective community, you know? And how do you continue to grow and still be part of the collective? Is that even possible? Sometimes there's hard choices that have to be made, but my work ultimately is about how do you grow and also still set your boundaries, but also giving space for everyone else in the family to grow without destabilizing others. And I guess there's also a thing that like, as you grow, you also be responsible for changing the mindset or being an example. So how does that all play out? So yeah, that's the crux of this work.
The crux. It sounds really comprehensive. It sounds very unique. I don't think other people are approaching, you know, money skills in the same way.
Yeah. I think awesome. Because thank you. I think one of the things when I think about it is that money is often taught from a very individualistic point of view, right? So there's often this assumption that like we make money and it's an individual thing, right? But the truth is that when you come from collective communities, making money is very much a collective thing as well. Yes, you are wealthy, but there's still this thing that our son, our cousin, our daughter, our aunt is wealthy. And that has major implications. So how do you maneuver that? And we really, really talk about the collectivity of wealth. And even like in collective societies, there's also the communal aspect, right? So you're still a neighbor. You're still like interacting with other humans. So how does that look like? And if you've been brought up with that mindset, how do you maneuver everything? Like and I won't lie, it's been a big, big challenge for me. And I'm always grateful that like one of the interesting things is because I studied in the US, I got like two versions. I studied and lived in the US. So I think when I always share the story that like when I first started in the US, when I was studying there and I was doing my MBA and they were talking of entrepreneurship and they were like, you need to sell something. I would tell people about a thing, but I wouldn't sell it. I wouldn't tell you buy it, and I wouldn't tell you the pricing of it because how I'd been brought up, that is rude, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't come out and ask for things. So also we do a lot of work around permission to ask, right? And permission to receive, because asking to me was seen as like so rude. So making the sale was something like that was no, you can't do it. And my teachers couldn't understand that because it makes no sense, right? Like you're here to study this, but I'm like, but now you want me to ask for money and to talk about it. This does not make sense. Like, that's why taboo. Would you do this? Right? Like I've kind of told you everything. So by me telling you about the product and the service, you should now make the offer to buy. Like, this is normal, right? That's what happens because you can see the value. I've already told you the value. Now it's up to you. So some of the things that like I had learned also in my family, and also just, I guess, like through osmosis back home, you know. And it's very, very interesting because we talk about selling, and I think this is why I love the work that I do, because we talk about marketing, we talk about selling, but we don't talk about the underlying beliefs and the things that we've been taught about, even as women globally, what you've been taught about being forward and the nice girl and being liked, and how like asking can make people not like you, how openly talking about things puts you at risk of being seen as just too much, and how that can affect how people see you, and that can make us withdrawn and then affect how we show up in our business. So yeah,
that's really powerful. Yeah.
Thank you.
No, your course sounds amazing. I hope I get to do it one day. I'm in a 9-month trauma course right now that's keeping me pretty busy, but definitely in the future, I want to do it. Sounds like it would be so helpful and so healing.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. No, I've enjoyed putting it together. And the other thing that I will say is that the course keeps growing. The more I understand about trauma and the more I do work around trauma, I keep adding things to the course, mainly because, like I said, there is no timeline for this course. There is no, you need to do this. And I think what I love is that I always say to people, yes, it's a course around money, but as you heal, you will notice your shifts, and there are much more practical things within the course around money. So you can do those practical things. But I think one of the things that I've noticed is that, like, if people come into the healing work with just the purpose of healing, not like there's an end result to this, I'm healing so that like my finances widely improve, but just the understanding that through the healing, you will make wildly different choices to what you've made in the past, because trauma does tend to keep us in a loop. Those choices, the choices that you make and the actions that you take from a space of having healed, will be very, very different. And that is what leads to different results and leads to different outcomes financially.
Right. So anyone listening that wants to know how to find your course or get to know you more, how do they find you online?
Oh, they can go to wealthy-money.com/moneymagic. Again, wealthy-money.com/moneymagic. You can get on the waiting list for the course. If the course is not open for registration, sign up for the waiting list. Once you're on the waiting list, there's a 7-day training program. It's all free. It's Tapping Into Ancestral Money Wisdom Program. Try that program and see how it works out for you.
Okay. I am so appreciative of your time and for being here with us today. It was quite an honor to get to know you.
Thank you so much, Karen. This has been such a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.